Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest this week grew up in Cleveland, Ohio, and earned a bachelor's degree in political science and a Juris Doctorate from the University of Michigan. For 8 years, he practiced law. Then in 1992, he became a judge, first as a judge of the Washtenaw County Circuit Court for 6 years, and then as an appeals judge to the Michigan First District of Appeals for 18. In 2017, Governor Rick Snyder appointed him to the Michigan Supreme Court. His name, the Honorable Justice Curtis Wilder, and I'm Jack Rasula. And this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Rasula. This is Anything Is Possible. And we're talking to the Honorable Justice Curtis Wilder, who is the fifth black justice in the Michigan Supreme Court history. Justice, welcome. A real honor to have you.
It's a privilege to be here, Jack. You are an amazing person and inspiration to me, so thank you for having me here.
Thank you. Can we start by talking about two other amazing people, your mom and your dad? Your dad's 89, your mom's 87, but your mom and your dad and your childhood.
I grew up in a middle-class neighborhood in Cleveland, Ohio, went to the local community school. And my parents were both very involved. My mother worked as a chief dietitian for a convalescent hospital. My father worked as a soil conservationist. They were both active in church, both active in the community, and spent a lot of time with us as kids. I have a younger brother, really teaching us that we're always required to give back to people, that we do for our family, but we also do for others. And my parents are remarkable people. My mother created a program in dietary technology and traveled the Eastern Caribbean, taking that program to countries that didn't have a lot of resources and helping them understand how dietary technicians could do some of the work that dietitians had normally done, making their healthcare systems more efficient. And my father, as a soil conservationist, traveled to many farms and many rural communities in northeastern Ohio, just helping people to have more prosperous crops, helping them to build good fisheries. Again, just helping people to do for themselves.
In the second grade in Cleveland, you became part of desegregation, and you took a bus ride 45 minutes each way. How did that change your life?
So that's a remarkable story. My second grade teacher at the neighborhood school confused me with another child in the class. I got all of his D's, he got all of my A's, and my parents grounded me immediately. This is not acceptable for you to get D's. They made an appointment with the teacher, and then several minutes into the conversation discovered she didn't know who I was really. So they insisted that I be moved out of the class. And the only way for me to be moved out of the class was for me to be bused to another school that was already participating in school desegregation in Cleveland. And as a result of that change, I discovered a teacher who saw some talents that I had and recommended me for the magnet school program in Cleveland. So I started going to schools where I continually took the bus. One to Moses Cleveland Elementary and then another to Harvey Rice Elementary. And both of those involved me taking the public transportation to go be with other talented students in the Cleveland public school system. It was a great opportunity for learning, expanding my horizons outside of my neighborhood.
Another great opportunity that God graced you with was you received an American Legion scholarship to Boise State.
God graced me with the opportunity to discover my passion. When I went to Boise State, I didn't know what that was. I was told simply, go there and find out. And what I found out is that the American Legion sponsors a program that teaches young boys and also young girls for Girl State lessons in citizenship and government. And we were told we would have to either run for election or help somebody run for election. And then the winner would actually perform the duties of the job they had been elected to. And those who were not elected would take appointive positions in government. The whole idea was to teach us about campaigns, about how to vote in an election, and then about how to work in government. And I was elected county prosecutor and won all of my cases until one of my convicted individuals appealed his conviction to the Buckeye Supreme Court. And the Buckeye Supreme Court set aside my conviction and told me the reason they did it is they wanted to give the guy a break, not that I hadn't proven my case. And there began a thoughtful process about the role of judges in our system of government. And that really appealed to me, the idea that judges would follow the law, not follow their own passions, follow the law as enacted by the legislature, not decide to do whatever they thought was best. And I decided that summer that I wanted to go to law school and someday become a judge. And my high school counselor was very supportive. She said, go to the University of Michigan. My husband is a lawyer. He got his law degree at Michigan. You should go to Michigan. And so I did.
You talked about follow the law or the practice of law. Years ago, I was honored to have Dennis Archer on the show. And he made a statement, Judge. He said, it's a calling.
Very definitely, it's a calling for me. I don't think you can do jobs in the public sector in particular and do them well and with passion unless you feel a calling. And I've definitely felt a calling to be a lawyer, to be a judge. There's so much that we as judges have the opportunity to do to impact our communities while still following the law. As a trial judge, I had tremendous amount of discretion in sentencing. Sometimes that meant incarcerating people, but sometimes that meant putting them on probation and helping them get through one of the most difficult challenges in their life. And particularly when you help a young person discover that they don't have to be involved in criminal activity, they instead have talent. They can use that talent for their own good and for the public good. The way they feel about themselves after having discovered that, the joy that they begin to receive because they have discovered a new way of living, is a tremendous joy for me as a judge. And so to do that as a trial judge, and then to serve as I have as an appellate jurist in many nonprofit organizations, having led the Michigan Judges Association, for example, which helps the legislature in designing our court system. Those are tremendous blessings and really is a calling.
We're talking to the Honorable Justice Curtis Wilder, and I'm Jack Rasula. And this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything Is Possible. I'm Jack Rasula, and we're with the Honorable Justice Curtis Wilder. In May of 2017, Governor Rick Snyder appointed him to the Michigan Supreme Court, thereby making him the 112th justice in the court's history. speaking of history, tell us about the brilliance of our founding fathers.
I think our founding fathers very well understood that the secret to a successful government was the engagement of its people and the separation of powers that forces the legislative and the executive branches to work together to build consensus that that the people desire, and then to have a judiciary serve as a proper check on the excesses of either of those branches, forcing the branches to respect the constitutional rights that the people have adopted.
A few years ago, I had Judge Fred Mester on, another great man, and he made a statement that Socrates believed that a great judge had four traits. Hear courteously, answer wisely, consider soberly, and decide impartially.
It's hard to beat what Socrates said. The essence of decision making is to be impartial when you're a judge. You have to listen to both sides, weigh what you've been provided. As a trial judge, you're weighing evidence and you're applying the law. As an appellate judge, your guide is the Constitution and the statutes that apply to those particular set of facts. And we have to impartially apply that law, which the legislature has adopted, the governor has signed, the people have elected those individuals to serve. And we judges are required to respect those policy choices.
Tell us, if you will, about the 7 years as a judge on the Washtenaw County Circuit Court.
Washtenaw was a great opportunity for learning for me. As a 32-year-old, when I took the trial bench with a lot of enthusiasm, a lot of energy to do good by the community. And as I've mentioned before, in the sentencing realm, working with young people, helping them turn their lives around while they're on probation was a great joy for me. Becoming the chief judge in 1996 and leading a project that was testing whether there are better ways for the trial courts to utilize their resources more efficiently, more effectively for the benefit of the public. Out of that particular demonstration project in Washtenaw County and other in other counties emerged the family division of the circuit court, the idea that there should be judges who spend their time focused on the family and the family needs. And that was one of the things that our demonstration project, which I was leading, was trying to determine. And so there were a lot of great things, a lot of great people that I had the opportunity to work with when I was in Washtenaw County.
In 1999, you start another glorious chapter in your life, an 18-year chapter as an appeals judge to Michigan's First District of Appeals.
When I joined the Court of Appeals, it was a tremendous joy and honor. As a trial judge, I used to joke that those appellate judges didn't know what they were doing. They didn't really understand what we were faced with at the trial court. And then, as I said, once I joined the Court of Appeals, I kind of had to change my perspective on that, because now I was one of those appellate judges. And the great thing about being an appellate judge is the opportunity to have more time for reflection than the trial judges have. there's a tremendous volume at the trial courts, and the trial courts have to make quick decisions. You do that by trying to be prepared ahead of time and anticipate what issues are going to arise, but you really don't have the time for reflection that you would like. And at the Court of Appeals, that's all we do. We receive the parties' briefs, we analyze the issues, and then we hear oral argument and write opinions. It's much different than the trial court, where you're seeing people all the time. You're interacting with citizens of the public. At the Court of Appeals, you're mostly just seeing lawyers, and you're mostly thinking about cases. But the intellectual rigor of that was just a great joy to me. I felt like I was doing very meaningful work, trying to understand the statutes and constitutional provisions before us, and giving an answer that the people deserved, remembering that they elected the legislators and the governor who were responsible for that legislation that we were now interpreting. And therefore, to give the best and reasonable interpretation of that litigation before, or that statute, or that constitutional provision before us, would kind of close the circle, that the legislature and the governor had been responsible for the enactment, and now the court was responsible for its reasonable interpretation. And I enjoyed that job, and it also gave me an opportunity, because we're in our offices most of the time, to do a lot of nonprofit work on the side.
Speaking of a tremendous joy and honor, in May of 2017, you become Michigan Supreme Court Justice, the fifth black justice in the court's history. Your dad was 88, your mom was 86. How did you tell mom and dad? And what was that like?
I remember calling my parents and asking them what they were doing on May 9th. And they both said, well, we think we're free. Why? I told them that I would like them to come to Lansing, Michigan, to watch Governor Snyder announce that he was appointing me to the Michigan Supreme Court. And the joy and pride in their voices was something I'll never forget. And I also told them that I saw my appointment to the Supreme Court as a tribute to them, that they had taught me about giving back, about working hard, about recognizing that not everything goes well in life, but then you get up and you have faith that this is part of a journey, that God sees the whole plan, we don't see the whole plan, and therefore, just continue to have faith and work hard and good things will happen. And this is one of the best things to happen in my life.
Speaking of good things will happen, Justice, what goes on in the conference room behind the closed doors in Lansing?
A lot of discussion.
Do you have like a March Madness pool or a...
We wouldn't keep it very mysterious if we put all of our secrets out in the public air. It being the 112th and the fifth black justice in the court's history, it's a tremendous honor. It's a tremendous legacy to uphold. I recognize I have an immense responsibility to the public and to the history of this great institution, to apply all of the knowledge, all of the intellect that I have, and bring it to bear to solve some of the greatest challenges that are presented to our state. It's a privilege to be able to hear the oral argument, read the briefs, and weigh in on some of the important issues of the day.
We're talking to the Honorable Justice Curtis Wilder, and everybody that has the honor of meeting him really admires him. When we come back, we're going to talk about some of the people he admires. And I'm Jack Rasul, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. This is Anything Is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Krasula, and we're with the Honorable Justice Curtis Wilder. Justice, some of the people that you really, really admire. One, Judge Damon Keith.
Well, Judge Keith is a legend. Not only was he a brilliant legal scholar, but he was courageous. He was willing to take a chance and speak truth to power and do it in a very respectful way, but a very clear way. And I think that that is the role of the judge. You may not always agree with a position, but whatever the law is and whatever the law leads you to, you have to stand up for that. And Damon Keith, time and time again, consistently over his career, stood up. But he also made time to help the community. And it's one of the things that I've tried to do in my career is to give back. Damon Keith has certainly done that. And so he's to be admired for not only what he's accomplished as a jurist, but what he's accomplished as a man.
Another justice you admire, Bob Young.
Bob is, incredibly bright, incredibly talented. What he has done to help reorganize and restructure our court system, nothing short of amazing. Bob took some principles from, his work in the private sector and forced all of us in the judiciary to be more accountable to the public and for the public dollars that we are allocated. And so again, in addition to being a brilliant jurist, he helped reshape the judiciary and provided as a more effective institution, responsive to the citizens. And finally, I think Bob was very instrumental as Chief Justice in helping to create a different culture at the Supreme Court, one that's very collaborative. And that continues today, even in his absence.
One more person that you really admire, Judge Jim Kingsley.
Jim was a Calhoun County Circuit Judge who reached out to me early in my career, asked me to get involved with the Michigan Judges Association. And I didn't know Jim's background of being an Ivy League scholar. I didn't really understand that he had been actively involved at Albion College. He never really talked about himself. He was always talking about others, talking about how can we make the system of justice work better for the citizens that we serve. He was a very hardworking circuit judge, very well respected in his community. He led the Michigan Judges Association early in my tenure on the Michigan Judges Association, and he led it with distinction and honor. Those are the kind of people you like to emulate, Damon Keith and Jim Kingsley and Bob Young, people who make a difference, people who are seen for the impact that they've made, not just in their role as judges, but in their role in the community.
We're talking to the Honorable Justice Curtis Wilder, and in July of 2017, he received the Honorable Harold Hood Award, presented by the Association of Black Judges in Michigan. Justice, what has 26 years behind the bench taught you?
Humility. There are some very talented lawyers. There are some very committed citizens. There are a lot of problems that are presented to the courts. And judges don't always have all the answers. We're required to make the tough decisions on cases before us. But we need to respect that a lot of people within our system of justice are making just as much of a difference in their communities as we might be. The social workers who are actively involved, for example, in our veterans and other treatment courts, the judges can help organize that treatment court. But the people who are working with the individuals who have been sentenced to that treatment court and help them day to day to turn their lives around, those are real heroes, in my opinion. The prosecutors and defense attorneys who understand that each person has a right to be presumed innocent, they have a due process right to a fair trial, and that the prosecutors and defenders who make that happen, they're heroes in the system.
There's another side of you, Justice, that many people don't know about. Your love, your passion for music. Where did you get that?
My father sang in the church choir for most of my life. And he always had jazz music or classical music playing around the house. I played piano myself from the age of 8 until 16. And then I played clarinet in the school band, and bass clarinet, and also bass clarinet in the marching band one year. I just fell in love with music. It's a way of not escape, but just sheer joy to get away from the problems of the day and allow that music to carry you to another place. And as I have aged and had the opportunity to be more involved with other organizations, I've worked with nonprofit organizations that want to help bring music to students. The Detroit Symphony Orchestra, Interlochen Center for the Arts. In my own church, I sing in the chancel choir. That's also an opportunity to give back to God for all that He has given to me, and to be an active part of the ministry of my church.
You talk about the joy of singing in a choir to our Lord.
When you are singing in church, you're helping the minister, but you're also doing it for the Lord. And the Lord blesses you by giving you a sense of community with Him. And it's really remarkable how after each service, someone will come up to the choir director and talk about a particular passage and one piece that moved them. It actually spoke to a problem that they were having in their life at this particular time. So it's like we're part of the Lord's ministry at that particular time. So it is a joy to be one with the Lord in that minute.
We're talking to the Honorable Justice Curtis Wilder, and I'm Jack Pasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Pasula. This is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to the Honorable Justice Curtis Wilder. the 112th justice in Michigan Supreme Court history. Justice, what message would you give to a listener who thinks he or she has a calling to be a lawyer?
I would say that law school is very difficult. It's very hard. But if you feel that this is your calling, you should pursue it. Don't let the fact that the challenges may be difficult be an obstacle to your pursuing your dream. I am aware of lawyers who took four opportunities to pass the bar before they passed the bar. And on the one hand, you might say, well, that lawyer, if they couldn't pass the bar, maybe not is competent to be a lawyer. But if they have passed the bar, then they are deemed competent, and they've taken that many opportunities to pass the bar for a reason. They want to make a difference. Whether it's doing family law. A lot of times this passion arises from something that occurred in their own lives. They may have been helped by a lawyer, and they feel like it's an opportunity for them to give back. So I would never discourage anybody from walking away from what they see as a calling.
Ross Perot has famously said at different times that very often when we become successful, we quit doing the very things that made us successful. You've had all this success, all this power, yet you've stayed humble. Why and how?
As I mentioned before, my being a Supreme Court justice is a tribute to my parents. And my parents taught me to be humble, taught me to give back, taught me to recognize that I didn't get to where I got by myself. I had a lot of help. And when you recognize that there are people who help you along the way, and really all they wanted for you to do in return is to help someone else, that grounds you. And I think that that's grounded me. It's driven me all of my career to realize that I'm not better than anybody. I have achieved some success because of the help of others and because of the way I've applied myself. But that doesn't make me better than others. I have great respect for my colleagues, for the lawyers who appear in front of my colleagues and myself. For those who do other jobs within our community, humility is essential, I think.
In the 30s and the 40s, the Black family was arguably the strongest family unit in America. What happened? And most importantly, how do we get it back?
I wish I had an expertise to give the answer to that question. I know that in my own family, faith is important. And when you don't have faith, things can fall apart. I don't know how drugs and gangs have seemed to take over our communities so strongly. But I believe that it is through continued faith, through continued outreach, trying to understand each other, through continued recognizing that we need to help each other when we can. Maybe we can get back what we used to have. I don't have the answer, Jack. I wish I did. I mean, I've seen so much challenge in my 26 years, nearly 26 years as a judge. And I know that I've been able to impact on an individual basis. But I don't know that I have the answer of how to solve this societal problem, except for to keep trying. Keep reaching out, especially to those who are working directly in the community and offering support to what they're doing.
As our time winds down tonight, what advice would you give, Your Honor, to our young listeners?
First of all, you have to work hard. Nobody will give you anything in life. You have to earn it. Secondly, there are a lot of people around you who, seeing your initiative and drive, will want to help you because somebody helped them in life. I would also urge young people to try some different things. Had I not gone to Boy State, I never would have discovered my passion and my calling. And so if somebody suggests that you try some things, maybe try it. You may discover the thing in life that gives you the drive and energy and excitement and joy that you're looking for. And finally, I would say give back. Help others as you have been helped. Because by giving back, you'll find just as much joy as you might find in your own individual achievements.
Justice Curtis Wilder, you live that tribute to your mom every day. You give them joy every day. Keep up the great, great work.
Thank you very much, Jack.
Keep making them proud. Please join us next Saturday. Until then, I'm Jack Krasula. Thanks for listening. And make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spahom. Believe.